5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's the new Panic Room. It's the show other shows want to be, and the show that authors want to be on. The all-new Panic Room radio show is brought to you by HellboundBooks.com.
Well, good evening. It is the new Panic Room episode 222, which is rather exciting because it's lots of twos. I like number twos for obvious childish reasons, but it is the 4th of February. 2021, or, you know, year two in the after times, after coronavirus. So I think we have to start changing things. You know, I think this is the new normal, so I think we need to embrace it. We need to embrace it and, creep out from our underground bunkers every now and then and hug a panda or something. Because, you know, who doesn't like pandas? I mean, show me a man who hates pandas and I'll show you a man who's tired of life, pretty much. But speaking of hugging pandas...
Come on, I'm with you.
next, Dina?
Oh, I could use a nap.
You're not gonna moan, are you? Don't start moaning, because I've had a rough day today. So, to be honest, yeah. I don't care. I really moan all you want, but I really don't give a flop. To be honest, not tonight.
This week has just been this. It flew by. We joke about the fact that we didn't we just do this, but seriously, 2 days ago I think we just did this. So I don't know where the week went. I am kind of excited because weekend is close, and
I spend a lot of my weekend working. It's either working or having my money spent by the children. So yeah, woo.
Yes. Although
we did buy a new snake last weekend. So
How is she doing?
She's great. We went to the Reptile Expo in Conroe. It's about 40 minutes from here, which was kind of cool. And we went, and my daughter wanted a corn snake. I'm boring myself. But we got there, and there's some fantastic stuff. They had Gila monsters, which I didn't know you could get as pets. I thought they were protected species, obviously. Maybe captive bred ones, but and I saw the other in this. I love them, and they were little baby ones. They're probably about 5-6 inches long. They were gorgeous. And I said, I'm totally having one of that. $4,000, like, what?
Wow. That's
but
great.
They were awesome. Yeah. But yeah, we ended up with a pale yellowy coloured ball python. She ate for the first time on Tuesday, I think. Yeah, on the Tuesday. So yeah, she's settling in. She's happy. But yeah, I love
that's
those because they're just. It's like a trip to the. It's like a cheap trip to the zoo, to be honest. It's the best part of the zoo. My favorite part of the zoo is always like the, the reptiles, the insect house, that sort of thing. And of course, my daughter knows me well enough, and she pointed out every giant centipede because they were selling the damn things. They're selling. Why, people? If anybody's listening who has one of those pets, don't. And I said I was tempted to buy them all up and just take them outside and stamp on them, because there'd be less of the damn things in the world.
That's true, yeah.
So it's like, and one was moving. Moving.
Well, that's what they do.
Oh, no, but the others were just there, and you could kind of pretend they were fake. But this one was, actually making my skin crawl thinking about it. And this thing was just like movie. It was with all its little legs and whatnot. And I just
Yeah, I would love to go to a place like that. But I fear that we would come home with something. And we have enough pets here. And to be truthful, one ball python is enough for me. Just eaten, and I have to give her a couple of days before I handle her. I miss her like crazy. I really do. But one is good, and we take her out as often as we can, and we have her out for a good hour and a half at each time. And I don't think we don't have enough time for another one. Even though, the yellow and the orange ones. I think banana. Oh my gosh, I want one so bad. They're so beautiful. But we just have our baby Misha, and we're happy with her. But I love seeing your pictures, though. I did not realize how big she was until I saw the picture of India with her, and I was like, wow,
yes.
I thought it was just a baby. She's good size.
It's funny because my daughter. Handle. She was asking, "Can I handle?" She handles. It was a No, it was a corn snake, a little corn snake. No, no, was it a rat snake? It was only a tiny little thing, and this thing was, it was kind of aggressive. I mean, it was opening its little mouth, and it was no bigger than a worm, to be honest. She was all nervous with it, and yet the big ones, not a problem. No, but this one, it handles well, it feeds right. Yeah, she got it home, she's playing with it on her bed, and of course it did a big poo all over the bed. In. Oh, God.
That is the worst. I get pooed on all the time by Misha, all the time, and it's the worst thing ever. It stinks so bad.
It does smell bad, and
awful, just awful. And
well, my
ball
python, I've had him since 1999. I don't handle him as much as I again, time-wise, etc. these days, but never once in all those years, never once pooed on anybody.
Yeah, well, my
I've been
old
pooed
one
on by
one
most things. Most things in this house, including the children, have crapped on me at some point. But never mind him, bless him. He's always we've got an understanding. He's all right.
I think it's Misha's age. I think she's just a little thing and can't really hold it real well yet. Or that's what I'm thinking, because I never had a problem with my Monty from when I was a teenager. I never. Yeah, and so I think it's just her age, and maybe she'll grow out of it. Or I'm hoping, because it's just I've gotten to the point where I bring a towel. I have to use a towel when I have her out because
they do it. It's like a defense thing, you know. I mean, that's what I said. I mean, she was handling it and playing with her, you know, on the day we brought her home, you know, and she was playing with her and what have you, and she's just nervous, you know. It's a nervous thing. Like you say, some predator picks them up and they shit all over them. They tend to let go pretty quick. So.
Well, I mean, this will be with Misha. I'll have her out for a good hour, and she's just, you know, moving around a little bit, not too much, you know, and it's like she's just waking up, and like after a good hour and a half, and then I know it too. I'm like, you should put her back, and then I don't, and there you go, poop all over.
Hey, awesome. Awesome, yeah, but I think the last thing that pooed down me was the ferret. We were bathing, and I picked her up out the bath, and she just did a big squirty poo down me. But she's adorable, so you know, you forgive them. You forgive them.
Anywho,
I'm assuming we have some sort of show going on this evening. Otherwise, why am I here? Really,
I could be sleeping
right now. What have we got going on?
On our first segment tonight, we have horror author Suzanne Madron. I'm hoping I didn't butcher her last name too much. And then a little later on in our show, we'll have novelist Lee Matthew Goldberg. So, yeah, we have a great
awesome.
Show.
Awesome. Right. I think we should. If you want to show, let's introduce our first guest. I'll let you do that because it's kind of your job. You do it so much better than I do.
All right, our first guest is horror author Suzanne Madron. Woo!
Hello. How badly did Xena butcher your name?
Not bad at all. It was fine.
Yay!
So how is it pronounced?
However you want, however you remember to spell it, that's the best way.
There
you
go.
Oh, right. Okay. Okay.
I'll remember
we
for
like
next
you.
Time. Yeah.
Excellent. Excellent. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
It used to be fun to get James to pronounce the names of, like, and have it be like a really long, you know, weird name or something. It was great because, you know, he's foreign and he doesn't really get it right. And it was so much fun. And now he makes me do it. So,
yeah, exactly. That's exactly why
Italian.
I make you do it.
My original last name is Italian and it's got all the Z's and the vowels. And, oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. I would be.
Yeah.
I probably just wouldn't even bother. To be honest,
I changed it to Mandarin because I figured people could spell Mandarin versus trying to pronounce even the Italian last name. So I was like, yeah, I'm just going to go easy on you.
Awesome.
Yeah, I like that. Thank you.
So Suzanne is here to talk to us about Xena. I'm speaking. Do you know? I'll tell you that you can't get the staff. You know, I've tried, but you know, it's just, at least Extina's cheap, so that's why she's still on the show. To be honest, between you and me, and Suzanne is here to talk about the Watershed. Terrific tagline. After receiving the impossible phone call, Sam returns to old stomping grounds to discover who or what is calling from beyond the confines of an old property. So fill us in. That sounds gripping.
It is. So it's got a story behind the story. Growing up, because listening to you guys talk about the snakes and the tractors and everything else, growing up, I lived on a non-working farm. So there was a lot of land, a lot of abandoned buildings and stuff like that. And one of the abandoned buildings was what we referred to as the watershed. And it was an old irrigation shed in the middle of a field all by itself. And it was absolutely terrifying. And we were never allowed near this thing because it had this, like, you know, broken metal cistern in the middle of it that was still filled with water. And we didn't know how deep that was. So we were never allowed near it. And
wow.
Trying to think of a story for an anthology that had come around. It was for a Lovecraft themed anthology. So I was like, you know what? So I wrote The Watershed, and it got some really great reception amongst the horror community.
That's fantastic. It's nice when there's a great, you know, it was the story behind that. It's it sort of brings it to life a little bit more. As a writer, I guess it's, you've got that to draw on, yeah?
Oh, yeah. I mean, all my stories have a story behind them. That one has I mean, there's just so many things about that particular property and, you know, some of the houses and stuff that I lived in growing up that, you know, I'm sure I can fill books.
Yeah, awesome.
Literally.
Well, yeah, is after all, yeah, that's your job. So, you know, it's one of those things, you know, things happen and, you know, you speak to any author and to different degrees, you know, there's always a little bit of us, a little bit of something, a little bit, you know, there's a memory or chat or whatever, you know, in everything we write. And it's funny, somebody said to me years ago, you know, I should think about, you know, writing a autobiography. Well, I really don't need to. A, I'm not that interesting, to be honest with you. B,
everybody's,
you know,
got a story.
If you bought all of my books, you know, including ones I've not written yet, it's all there. You know, that'd be fun for somebody, you know, a future generation to cobble everything together from all of my books and cobble together my life story, because it'll all be in there at some point.
You know, it's funny that you say that, because I don't think I realized that until I actually started writing as well. But yeah, there are pieces of us in everything we write. And so it's kind of fun for me now when I'm reading an author, I'll try to, you know, I wonder if this is something, I wonder if this is real. I wonder if this is real. I do it all the time now. So So when I'm reading
with
you.
Neighbors. Sorry, go ahead.
I want to hear.
our neighbors across the street before they moved in, so I wrote this novella for sale or rent, and another well-received book in the horror community, also Lovecraft-themed, and the house across the street kept going up for sale and up for sale and up for sale. And one day I'm like sitting there and I'm looking at it and I'm like, you know, it's like maybe there's like, you know, monsters in the house or something. And I'd been in the house. I knew, you know, what was in there. And I was just like, you know, the house just wants a family to live in it. And so I wrote this entire like horror story about it called For Sale or Rent. And so the neighbors that live there now, you know, we're really good friends. And the running joke is they live in the For Sale or Rent house.
Awesome.
Yes.
Yeah, they know of the story and they liked it.
Where we live, the house directly across from us, we've been here, 3 years now, I think, close to 3 years now. And this is the third people who have lived there since we've been here. And it does make me wonder why.
Oh, my goodness. Like, yeah, well, that's it. There's a story there. And, you know, writers being writers, you know, if you don't know the story, you just jolly well make one up. Call it the murder house and see how well they get along with that.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, you're in the murder house.
My life is honestly weird enough. I don't have to make that much of it up.
Oh,
oh wow, cool.
Yeah, I've lived a very strange life.
Oh, I want to hear more about the watershed.
No, I want to hear more about the strange life, to be honest. That sounds intriguing. Most intriguing.
I just posted throwback pictures, so go check out my Facebook profile and you can see some of the photographic evidence of the strange life that I've lived.
Oh, right.
Nice.
I will do that.
But as far as the watershed, it was literally just in the middle of this field, and that's one of the opening lines in the story. Is it's just this shed, this dilapidated shed, living in the middle of this field. And while I was writing the story, I went on the satellite imagery from Google Maps to see if it was still there. And there's this like shape in the ground where it was, but the building itself isn't there. And I contacted my cousins because, you know, part of my family still lives there. And I contacted my cousins. And I was like, hey, is the old watershed still there? And they're like, oh my God, I haven't thought of that place in decades.
Awesome.
Yeah, I definitely want to hear more. Do you have an excerpt to read for us?
I sure do.
Yay.
So I will read it if you're ready.
Yep,
please do.
Yours.
Go for it.
Okay. The building stood off kilter and out of place in the middle of a disheveled field of wild hay on a remote part of the property. But to say it was lost in the 108-acre former farmstead was not true. Somehow, the warped planks, disguised as they were by masks of lichen and a wall of long-dead wild raspberry brambles, were glaringly obvious, even from a distance, like a shipwreck sticking out of the sand of an abandoned beach. As a child, my cousins and I had been forbidden to explore the structure. There were many dilapidated buildings on the property, but only two areas were completely off-limits. The first was the part of the barn that had been struck by lightning around half a century ago, the boards still black and reeking of fire and smoke on humid days. The second restricted place was the watershed, with its gaping window and collapsing walls. At one point, it had been used for irrigation, but that was long before our time. Water from an underground aquifer filled a cistern that was more of a dangerous jagged square cut into the ground and built up in corroded metal than the well it was intended to be. From the outside of the building, we were unable to see into the reservoir. All we could see from our nervous glances through the broken out and sagging window frame was the attempt to cover the open well with bowed, rotten boards weighed down with masonry. Somewhere in the field on the slope below the watershed, there was supposed to have been a valve which had allowed an irrigation system to be hooked up in order to drain the cistern without having to go near the watershed itself, as if the original owners of the property also felt the odd sense of foreboding surrounding the place. We had never found the valve and assumed it had been buried long ago. We didn't question our parents' orders not to explore the building. There was something about the shed that suggested it didn't want anyone to go inside, that there was something dark and brooding in there, and it was ready to devour anyone who ventured too close. Even on the sunniest of days, the hayfield in which it stood was gloomy and uninviting, with a lone, twisted, ancient apple tree to stand sentinel at the edge of where the lawn ended and the field began. Decades had passed since those childhood summer afternoons had been turned cold by the dare from one of my cousins to get next to the watershed to touch it. A lifetime had gone by since the sounds from inside the structure had sent us screaming in terror that last hot afternoon to never venture near it again. My family had moved shortly after the incident, leaving the property and all its ghosts behind in our wake. I stood on the edge of the overgrown lawn and stared in disbelief across the field gone wild with years of uncut hay. There it was, still standing as if by some dark miracle. The old gray planks making up the walls were just as I remembered them, and the dead raspberry brambles looked just as sharp and thorny as they had been in my youth. I knew that to move through them would be like scaling a fence topped in razor wire with no clothes on. Once again, I stared into the cyclopean, heavy-lidded window and shivered. Dare you to touch it? I was too tired to feel the terror I should have felt at the words and turned to stare at my cousin John. He tried to smile, but his amusement quickly faded as his eyes lingered on the watershed lurking in the distance. Time had taken its toll on him, and his hair was now gray at the temples, his expression haggard. He looked as if he hadn't slept in years. I wondered if any of us had slept an entire night without waking up screaming since that last summer. "Dare you to touch it," I countered, but it was an empty threat. I took out a pack of cigarettes from my jacket pocket and opened it. Neither one of us smiled. "Okay, why the hell are we here?" John and I turned as the eldest of my cousins approached us. His dark suit had been neatly pressed, and his hair was a pure and silvery white, slicked back from his face. He looked at us with ice blue eyes, the color of dead things wading beneath frozen water. "I got a call from my mother," I told them. "So?" I wasn't looking to see who had bothered to ask the question, or if it had been both of them in unison. It didn't matter. I tapped a cigarette out of the pack. The lighter flame shook as I held it to the cigarette clenched between my teeth, but I was able to get the damn thing lit after the third try. After she died.
Ooh, I like that. Oh, my God. I want to know what happens now. Holy crap.
That's awesome. Awesome. Of course, this is the part where Xena tries to blag a free book from you. Don't give in to it. Be strong.
Yeah. When you sign it, it's X-T-I-N-A, okay? Oh, that's
shameless.
Awesome.
You shameless woman.
Nothing scares me more than a ghost, and you know, it's like a joke. Now it's like a running joke. My mom passed a few years ago, and she knew how terrified I am of ghosts. So I just imagine her like creeping, you know, like tiptoeing around so she doesn't scare me. Like that's what I see in my head. I'm like, she knows if she makes a movement and I hear it, it's gonna freak me out. So, yeah,
this is gonna freak you out more. You ready for it? So my mom died in 2013, and we always had a game before she, like when she would come visit, when she was alive, she would move one thing in my office to mess with me. Just one thing, because I have a very select way that I have stuff set up, and she would move one thing. And I'd always figure out which one thing she moved, and it drove her crazy because she could never figure out how I did it. And I never told her my secret. And so after she died, you know, like about a year goes by and I started to notice stuff was moving, like just one thing. And I was like, that's so weird. I was like, and I figured it was my kid because he was a toddler and he was, you know, enamored with all the crystals and stuff that I have on my desk. I was like, okay, it's my kid. And one day a friend of mine and I were talking and she's like, your mother wants you to know that she's been messing with your stuff.
Wow.
And she's been moving one
awesome.
Just to mess with you and see if you
awesome.
Notice. And I'm like, shut up.
Oh, no.
That's
brilliant.
Oh, you
so
know, for Christmas.
Story.
For Christmas, I got this candle thing that you just, it's a manual. It's one you, it's not a real candle, but you can push a button and it lights up or whatever. And it's really pretty and I love it. And I would turn it on and you know, a couple of days after Christmas, it kept coming on. And at first I thought it was the kids. It's gotta be, who's turning on my candle? Are you touching? Mm-hmm. I'm questioning everybody. And no, they didn't touch it. And they, you know, they, nobody seemed concerned about this, but it's freaking me out, you know? And my aunt was over just recently. She's the one who gave me the candle. And I told her the story, and she's like, oh, they're on a timer. Every 6 hours it's going to come on. But I totally freaked myself out for days. I was like, oh, my God, it's on again.
The haunted candle.
I'm laughing because my son has those same candles. They have a remote control timer. And
yes, who knew?
And they were doing,
who knew?
They were doing the same thing. And I kept going like, did you turn these candles on? Cause,
yes.
But, okay, so I'm not the only one who was like, what is going on with these candles?
Oh, gosh, I really thought I was, you know, going to need to call in the priest, okay? Oh, God, yeah. I don't handle ghosts ghosts. I do not handle ghosts or possessions or anything like that well at all. God, it terrifies me, so. Oh, my God.
Yeah, the possession thing's creepy.
Yeah, definitely. But, you know, ghosts aren't much different, really. Anything I can't see that's doing some weird things, no. You know, just recently, a couple of days ago, we watched what was I don't remember what it's called. It's some kind of a new special. I don't know how new it is, but it's on the Amityville Horror House. I think that mm-hmm. actually was what it's called, the Amityville Horror House. And it was pretty good. I really liked it.
Documentary? I think there's some documentary on. I think or another series of documentaries on the. I think the real crimes behind these things. Is that the one?
I think so. I believe so, because it was definitely a newer one, because they had like an older one that I'd seen mm-hmm. before, but this one, it was good. It had a lot of stuff in there with Lorraine Warren were talking mm-hmm. about it, and, mm-hmm. and see, I don't think I realized that they had been involved in the
I think there's a thing that had been circulating on Facebook. You know, these things pop up on Facebook from time to time, and you know, would you buy this house? You know, and obviously the Amityville House is there for whatever. I mean, I would buy it actually, and I would live in it. Cause I must admit, after like a week with me and the kids and the dogs and everything, whatever was possessing the house would just move out. It was like, no, I'm not. We're not putting up with this. This is terrible. They're terrible people. Suzanne, would you live somewhere like that with that kind of history?
Not in the Amityville Horror House, because I don't really care for living on Long Island. It's too expensive. But if it was like Piermont, New York, I would live in it in a heartbeat.
Mm-hmm. Oh God! I saw the movie, but I wasn't that impressed. For me, the scarier part was the story before the Lutz family moved in.
Yeah.
You know, the DeFeo.
The murder.
That is so creepy to me. How do you shoot six people? You know, and they're all in the same position. You know, nobody heard a gun go off. Nobody moved. To me, there's something
mm-hmm.
totally scary about what happened there.
Well, that's what gave rise to the story of behind the demons and possession and all the rest of it. Mm-hmm. There's certainly something I missed there, because they weren't drugged or anything, were they? That was the weird thing.
The houses were not that far apart.
No.
Yeah, yeah.
And Long Island has some weird energy. I mean, you got Montauk out there. You got Plum Island out there. You know, the Montauk Project, which is a fantastic book. but there's like a lot of weirdness out there. It's just a weird, strange vibe. And there's a Pine Barrens out there too, which if you've ever been through the Jersey Pine Barrens, they're terrifying. Mm. It's just miles of nothing.
Yeah, so, you know, for me, I would never. They could give that house away to me for free, and I wouldn't. I wouldn't mind storing it, you know. But no.
I would. If, again, like I said, you know, depending on obviously, you know, I don't have anything against where it is, but yeah, I would. I would definitely buy and live in that house. And got to help any demons that were still in there, because I'll tell you, they wouldn't last. Not with us lot. We're just awful. We're just terrible people.
I scare myself with just the thoughts in my head. I can scare myself, so I don't need a bigger story that could, you know, I really don't. I mean, so no, it's definitely not for me. But
you're a wuss. So you're just a big wuss. That's all.
I am, and I guess I'm okay with that. You know, I've come to terms with it. Don't scare me. Don't jump out at me. Don't. But I do like scary movies and I do like scary books. But I'm gonna be up for a week afterwards. Just, you know, I remember watching The Autopsy of Jane Doe when James recommended it to me.
I was by myself
watching this movie and mad at him. I'm like, I'll never talk to you again. It was terrible.
That was a scary movie, I have to admit.
It was incredibly well done. I've seen it a few times. I watched it with my daughter, and she absolutely loved it. And we've seen it, you know, quite a few times since. And it's just so incredibly well done. You know, it's just nice. It's claustrophobic. It's, and obviously Brian Cox is just brilliant in anything.
Oh,
but absolutely, just a perfect film. That the premise was just different as well. You know, when they mm-hmm. obviously spoiler alert, you know, when they revealed what was going on and that, it was like,
yeah,
wow, that is just phenomenal.
Yeah.
And trying to think, how long has that girl been alive? You know, hundreds of years and all the rest of it. It's just, mm-hmm. but with everything they'd done, they'd actually made it worse. So.
Yeah, I was kind of, that whole ending kind of angered me a little bit, I guess, because I expected it to go one way, and then it was just kind of like, nope, it's going to go this way. And mm-hmm. I was like, what?
Yep.
And then I was like, it's not your movie, Suzanne.
Yeah.
Oh, I know.
Well,
I know,
if you didn't like you, that's the beauty of the job we do. You know, you could jolly well write another one, write a different ending. You know, we can do that, which is fun. But yeah, I mean, it's having, you know, sort of been through the glut of Blumhouse films and getting very formulaic and relying on jump scares. I like a jump scare. I think we all do.
Yeah.
But, you know, the originality is so in anything cinema. I mean, Hereditary was brilliant because it was original. You get all the, obviously with all the Marvel and DC movies, they're all the bloody same, and the Blumhouse stuff, and then the remakes, and the lack of originality is and the upsetting thing is that we see great stories day in, day out, mm-hmm. you know, novels and short stories, and they're all just begging to be, mm-hmm. but unless it was written by Stephen King, the movie people won't even look at it, which is terrible.
And I kind of miss Hitchcock horror because, like, mm-hmm. you know, I call my stuff, you know, it's a mix of Lovecraft and Hitchcock horror because I leave it up to the reader's imagination because nothing will scare us more than our own imagination.
Yeah,
true.
Yeah.
So, you know, every single thing that I write, I'm like, would this ever be a Hitchcock shower scene? Go from there, you know, like, will it keep people up? Will it make people terrified of birds? Will it, you know, influence an entire generation of writers someday? You know, like, if it's not scaring you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm doing it
right. I love the Hitchcock was, again, he was an absolute master. He used to build the suspense and absolutely.
And he had a
big
shoot
fan.
Ratio. His film style, he had a 1-to-1 shooting ratio because his storyboards were so detailed, he could literally walk off the set and they knew exactly how to film it. And so
brilliant.
He literally would roll the camera, shoot it, and that would be the take. And that's
nice.
Almost unheard of in film.
One of my favorite Hitchcock stories was when he shot the birds. They actually physically attached birds to Tippi Hedren's clothing. They glued them on or tied them on or with string or something, but some of them were actually attached to her. But he said the stuff he produced, I don't think he produced one dud at all. Everything he did was just phenomenal.
Yeah, he was a perfectionist, but a genius perfectionist.
Absolutely. I mean, which is your favorite Hitchcock film?
My favorite Hitchcock film? Oh, that's a tough one. it is really hard to pick one. I mean, it's obviously Psycho, because it's such a creeping slow build, and then when you get to the end, it's like a gut punch when you realize what's been going on, and it's so much worse than you thought it was. But you know, then there's the birds and there's North by Northwest, there's Vertigo, you know, I mean, like, can you pick Rear Window? I think, that scene when he's literally just like sitting there screaming and you're literally like jumping up in your own seat, screaming like, get out of there. You're coming back.
You know? Yeah, I get that. Yeah, one of my favorite. I think one of his older films. His newer film. One of his later films. That's what I was looking for. Frenzy. About the serial killer. Again, it was very, very visceral.
Yep.
But the character of the cop in that was just great. You know, the guy he had a miserable home life. His wife was just a fruitcake. It was just, but that was almost as good as the, you know, the murder scenes and everything. But again, that was brilliant. Yeah. Again, there's always the misdirection and that's one of my. I remember seeing that as a like a late one Saturday night as a wee thing. I would like to see it again. I mean, it's been a lot of years. I'd love to watch that again, actually. I'll have to see if I can find it. It'll be on somewhere. Somebody somewhere will have that on. So, yeah, I'm going to have to try and find that.
What are you working on now, Susan?
Right now, I am working on a story called The House in the Circle in the Square. And it's kind of a continuation of For Sale or Rent and The Watershed, like in that same vein. So it's going to be a little bit of a ghost story. It's going to be like a little haunted house kind of thing going on with, like, you know, towns built on secrets sort of thing. And the blurb for that one, when it finally does hit. So the summary of it is that, you know, this woman gets relocated to a small town and she discovers why the rent's so cheap when she moves into this beautiful old Victorian. And let's see, I have it written down. Unfortunately, I write everything in a notebook.
Oh, God.
I can't just search. There's a search function in my notebook.
Yeah, you know, if I ever have to move somewhere and the rent is really cheap, I'm just passing. Just, you know, I'm so it's just something going on here. You know,
yeah,
it's the
exactly.
same thing with the people from the Conjuring. Like I read the book that the oldest daughter wrote about their experience in the house, and same thing was, you know, they got this one, you know, this really awesome house for like really cheap, and people should just know that should be a sign, you know.
Yeah,
your house is really cheap. Just question everything, or no, I'm not doing it. I want to pay full price to be ghost free.
Ghost free.
Well, my favorite quote so far out of this book that I'm writing is, every small town is built on a foundation of dirty little secrets, of bodies buried in the shifting mud. And every big city was
like
a small town.
Uh-huh. I like that, yeah.
Yeah, every big city was a small town. Got lots of bodies buried.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You have to come back when you publish that one. And
absolutely.
Again, when you... And I sign me up for that one, XTINA, before James tops me.
Yeah, could you write it faster so XT can have her a copy, please?
I am actually 23 pages in so far, and I just started like in January. So yeah, I'm fingers crossed I'll have it done this year. So
Excellent. Good luck.
Yeah, and we are just about out of time for our first segment, so tell us where we can find you online.
I am on Amazon. I am on the Facebooks. I'm pretty much on every social network, just at Suzanne, S-U-Z-A-N-N-E, Madron, M-A-D-R-O-N, all one big giant word, because I'm a writer, and why do I need spaces? On Amazon, if you go to amazon.com/Suzanne Madron, you'll find all of my works there. And yeah, I mean, if you go to Facebook, just go facebook.com/Suzanne Madron. That's me.
Suzanne Madron. Awesome.
And you'll see all of my exciting adventures.
Brilliant. We shall look forward to seeing you again.
Awesome.
Yeah,
thank you so much for
coming on the show, Suzanne. It was great.
Thank you for having me.
I want to read The Watershed now.
Well, that one is available.
Awesome. Yeah, Eggstein, buy your own, all right? Buy a copy. You just don't be afraid to tell us, Suzanne. Don't be afraid. We will speak to you again very, very soon. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Night.
Bye-bye. Right, and with that, it's already break time, so we'll have a break. Suzanne
Room Radio Show is brought to you by Hellbound Books, purveyor of all manner of dark fiction. You can find the publisher, along with links to all of their available works across platforms at hellboundbookspublishing.com. In the mood for something steamy to read, check out erotica author Jennifer Lynn's website at jenniferlynnerotica.com. You can find James and Xtina at their respective websites, www.jameslongmore.com for James and darkpoetprincess.com for Xtina. Don't forget to follow The Panic Room Radio on social media, our Facebook page, Unofficial The Panic Room Radio Show, Twitter at Panic Room Radio, our Vimeo channel with all of our previous shows, The New Panic Room Radio Show, and come visit us at our website, www.panicroomradio.com.
Hey, no!
to part two.
Well, welcome back. Welcome back, Xtina.
Oh, you know, I...
You are back.
So,
you did come. You have,
yeah.
You're still with us. You're still blessed. Bless your little heart.
So I wanted to tell the story here. I, you know, we had the same commercials for, like, you know, 4 years. And I read them all in, like, you know, 3 seconds flat because I was nervous and I was going really, really fast. And, you know, sweating just a little bit. So, you know, I'm re-recording them. And I think I'm nice and calm and cool, and I don't stumble over any of the words. And, oh, my God, I sounded awful. Like, I definitely have to redo those again. I don't know. You know, I'm like, is there an in-between, you know?
the trick is, remember last time you actually did them live, and then I actually did pulled the recording from that. So there you go. Maybe we should try that.
How come I don't remember that? Wow.
Because it was so long ago.
Right. Yeah, God, yeah. Oh, my God, yeah, maybe we should do that. Okay, there we go.
Yeah,
so I don't know. Yeah. So maybe not everybody thought it was as horrible as I did. Maybe it was just, you know, we hear ourselves and we think it's awful, but yeah, so, you know, there's that. Okay. Yeah.
There is that, indeed. Indeed, there is
that.
So, hey, what happens next? What comes next? You've done this before. What happens now? Oh, yes.
Well,
no, I'm only joking. I'm on the ball. You know, even though I've had, you know, it's been a week, I have to say, but, you know me, don't like to go on about it, but... I'll tell you what I have been catching up on is just finished season 5 of Silicon Valley. Because I last saw that, obviously season 5, they had a bit of a break or whatever, but season 5 and 6, and then they've done a Silicon Valley 10 years later sort of thing. But what a brilliant show. Certainly in this day and age, you know, with all the data protection and security leak and all the rest of it. It's brilliant. You know, it's been consistently good. It's not lost steam.
Awesome.
But I was reading, actually, Mike Judge, who created the show, said there won't be any more because, you know, the technical industry is in such a way now. It's almost like with Donald Trump. You know, he's just beyond parody with everything that's going on and with pretty much... You know, Zuckerberg, you know, on his way to owning everything, and it's just all too ridiculous now. So, which is it is a shame, but you know.
Yeah. I have. We just finished a rewatch. Well, rewatch for me anyway of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. I love that show. We just we just finished up season 7, which is the last, and it was. Good. I loved it. I did. I'm a huge fan. And, you know, I would joke around. I'm like, okay, now we have to start at the beginning. And the boyfriend says no. So I'm thinking, I loved the show Supernatural in the beginning. I loved the first, I don't know, probably 5-6 seasons. I just really enjoyed. And then I don't know what happened. They did some kind of, I don't know, it became almost comical or just, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I stopped watching, and I hear from people that I'm like, you got to keep going. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. And you know, they just ended, I think, on season 15. Something in a show that goes on that long,
wow.
It can't be crap, just, right? I mean, it's gotta. So maybe whatever.
Well, that's always the problem. Again, it's money driven, and that's the problem I found over here. You know, like the Office, the UK Office was 2 seasons and a Christmas special. That was it. I don't know how many seasons it got. I watched all of them, funnily enough, because it was okay, and I sort of got kind of interest in the characters. But you can tell they're in out of ideas, and some of the best, certainly with comedy, some of the best shows are. The short term is that the Big Bang Theory, you know, towards the end, it was just getting not
yeah.
so funny anymore. You know, the joke was passed, and then they got them married off, which kind of ruined the whole thing for me a little bit. But
when they brought in the
babies.
Yeah, well, because you never saw them. I mean, you know, a normal couple just having a kid, you're going to see the baby more.
Well,
that was a continuation
because obviously Howard, you never saw his mother, and it was a continuation of that theme that you never saw. That's kind of an in-joke thing, you know. So that was that.
Yeah.
But it just went on and on. I mean, I watched it to the very end. I actually cried at the last episode, to be honest with you. But it went on. I mean, it did. By about halfway through the seasons, it was just like. But having said that, I'm a big fan of Young Sheldon, which is on season four, I think, at the moment. It is incredible.
Wow.
I think I mentioned the show before, and it's obviously a spin-off from Big Bang, but the kid who is playing Sheldon is just fantastic. He's genuinely that way in real life, or he's one hell of an actor. You know, either way,
well,
he does such a great job. You should do it. If you like Big Bang, you will enjoy it. There's some neat little references to, you know, the characters in the Big Bang as well. It's very well done, very well done. So there you go. That's your next binge watch.
All right, there's our TV recap for the week.
Mm-hmm. There'll be a quiz next week, obviously. So.
All right, I'm in.
There you go.
Yeah.
So who have we got coming up next? Because obviously I'm sure the listeners bored of hearing me droning on.
For the second half of our show, we have novelist Lee Matthew Goldberg. So,
hello.
Thanks for having me. I would have been a little more
like excited about that, but usually he makes me say it twice. So I was, you know, gonna wait to give you the woo. You know, the
I'm sorry. I feel bad now. I do feel bad.
Yeah, you know what? I'm going to do it anyway. So our next guest is novelist Lee Matthew Goldberg. Woo! There we go. I feel better now.
There you go. He's got two introductions. Thank you for joining us, Lee. And you're here to talk to us about, and I've lost my thing, The Orange City. Orange City. I'll let Xtina read the tagline. Do you have it there?
Sure. Imagine a secret hidden city that gives a second chance at life for those selected, but you are bound to the city forever. You can never leave. You know, it depends on what kind of city. If it's a really amazing city, maybe I wouldn't want to leave.
That's true. Spoiler, it's not an amazing city.
Oh, okay. Well, then.
that's the rub. But it lures you in to think it is at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Teases the thought of amazingness and then, you know, gets you in the jugular.
I like that. Obviously, you can't give too much away, obviously.
Yeah. But yeah, it's sci-fi, it's dystopian. And I don't know, I feel like we're coming out of a dystopian nightmare. We're still in it a little bit. So I think it's very relatable.
Yeah, no, we're still in the middle of a dystopian nightmare, I'm afraid.
Yeah, we're hopefully leaving one part of the dystopian nightmare, and we're still stuck in the other part.
Yeah.
There's a saying
in England, same shit, different packet. I think that 2021 is pretty much same shit, different packet.
That sums it up completely.
Mm-hmm.
I used to kind of feel like we were in the beginning days of like the Fear of the Walking Dead. You know, like we're not quite at the Walking Dead yet, but the beginning where you can see what, you know, stuff is, you know, things are starting to happen. But yeah, that's what I used to feel like last year. Now I'm just like, you know, I'm over
now
it
Walking
now.
Dead.
You know?
Yeah. We've left one show and we're in the more popular one, but the, you know, the one that's worse off for the characters.
I don't even know what to say anymore about that. Every week we say we're not going to do any more, you know, the coronavirus talk. We're not going to, none of it. And then it comes up anyway. I mean, how can it not, I guess, you know?
Yeah,
I mean,
you know, it's our lives, but it's true. It's like you're living also beyond it as well. So to try to find something in the midst of this, I don't know. My mantra is like kind of whatever makes me happy as long as I'm wearing a mask right now is what I'm going to do.
right. You know, I'm choking here. Sorry. I was going to say, I wanted to hear more about the Orange City. Do you have an excerpt to read for us?
Sure. I can read. The first chapter is very short, so I think it makes kind of a perfect excerpt. So I'll go ahead. So the first chapter is called The Selected, and here it goes. At 6 on the dot, the glove cellular let out a piercing ring. A timer turned on, ticking down with each buzz. He wouldn't have long to remain idle. The entire pod apartment vibrated, and his capsule bed slid open. The white ceiling drew his attention, the walls devoid of color, a minimalist fantasy, nothing like a home. Shades of the dream from last night still lingered, his knuckles painted with blood as he beat a shadow, the voice of the shadow belonging to a 10-year-old boy, the boy's cries stabbing E's ears. He shook that dream away. He removed the intravenous tube that connected him to his bed and switched off the cooling mist which allowed him to slumber for days. He stretched his old bones, his hair standing up in a state of white shock like it had since he was a young man. Swinging his thick legs over the side of the bed, he yawned at the morning before finally answering his cell. "I'll be right there," he coughed into the digital eye on his gloved palm. He removed the glove and pushed a button on the side of the bed. Doors opening along the wall revealed a sliver of a kitchen with a piping pot of subpar and gritty coffee brewing on the counter, the best offered to the scouts, and two sizzling poached eggs from a suspect source. He scarfed down the eggs and pushed another button to raise the shades along the lone wall facing east. The heart of the city hovered in the near distance, its new buildings staggering on one end like giant, colorful stalagmites. He watched it in motion as he did every morning. Between the scouts and the rest of the city lay a half a mile of ice water. The city was made up of many regions, his situated on the outskirts. Sometimes he wondered what it'd be like to fall into those frosty waters and drift off to wherever it might choose to take him, no longer having to shuttle between the city and the faraway outside world anymore. But instead of a dramatic suicide, he suited up and headed through the tunnel with a suitcase in hand like he had for 20 years. He convinced himself long ago that living here was better than rotting in prison, like he would have been if they hadn't selected him. At least he was still able to get lost in a bottle of whiskey, or feel the sun against his cheek during the few instances it was allowed to peek through the chronic clouds. Even though the city was far from ideal, the outside world remained definitely worse. It reminded him too often of the man he used to be and of the terrible sins he committed. These thoughts returned at the beginning of every week while he geared up for another one, as he wondered if one day the man in the eye might give him a promotion and he wouldn't have to be a scout anymore. That way, he'd never have to return to the outside world. Then he could possibly be at peace like all the city's inhabitants wished. Thanks.
Awesome.
I didn't want you to stop. You got to go on to chapter two. Now, you know, I always wonder when people, when you write something sci-fi or dystopian, you know, I'm in awe of the imagination that it takes. You know, I really always am, because when I write anything, it's with just with what I can see and feel and describe and talk to you about. But I just have I don't believe I do any kind of imagination to make up things that just sound so real. I'm like, that's really cool.
I'm a thriller writer. Normally all my other books have been thrillers, so this is my first kind of stab at sci-fi dystopian. And it's literally taken me, I think, from when I started it was a short story in college, so it's been almost 20 years working on this book. And it's really just because I would like put it down, pick it up a couple years later. You know, it wasn't literally me sitting and writing it for 20 years.
Right.
But to just create this world, like, it, I don't know, it was so hard to get right and for it to feel real, and it went through so many iterations. So I feel the same. I really applaud sci-fi writers because, like, I'm spent. Like, I don't know if I could do another sci-fi book like, right away, even though there's going to be a sequel. But beyond that, I'm ready to just jump back in thrillers because they just, I don't know, for me, they could come so much faster. It's just so much easier for me to kind of get them down.
Yeah, it does seem like once you create the world, though, it's got to be a lot easier to, like, the sequel probably would be easier for you. You know, you've already got the world created, and, you know, it seems like it'd be a lot easier.
I mean, even, like, I just got, it just got a review in Kirkus today, and it was a really good review, and they were like, okay, we have a bunch of these questions that we want answered in the sequel. So now I'm like, well, I have to deliver. It's like, Kirkus wants it. I can't let them down.
That's true. That's true. Yeah. That's awesome. No, I definitely, I definitely like the world and the feel that you've created there. And, I definitely want to hear more. And, when you go to make out the signed book, it's XTINA.
Okay. No problem. Absolutely. You got it. I'll send you a copy. My next post office. Got it.
Awesome. James usually, you know, makes fun of me or calls me out on trying to
do something. I'm embarrassed. I really am. You can feel free to say no. Feel free to say no to her. She's just terrible. She's shameless.
No, there's something awesome, also though. About, like, an actual physical copy and it's signed by the author.
Oh, there
and,
is.
You know, yeah. I mean, yeah. I send out so many, like, ebook people and things like that, but it's less personable. It's something
it's
old school
true.
And nice about giving an actual copy, and it looks you know, it's like the designer did such a great job on the cover, and it doesn't quite as translate, you know, on your Kindle.
Mm-hmm. I definitely agree with all of that. Yeah, I mean, for you, when you go to read a book, do you prefer to read the Kindle, or do you like a real book that you can hold?
Oh, yeah, definitely physical copy. Absolutely. I feel like also just I'm writing on a computer all day, so then it's almost like a nice break to read an actual book where I turn a page and just go to Kindle. But some people love it, and, like, it really helps sell books, so I'm not knocking it in any way, shape, or form. But I feel less like invested if I'm reading it on the e-version.
I never thought about it like that, but I can see that. And I've gone through stages where, you know, it's so much easier to grab your Kindle, or, you know, you have it on your phone or something like that. And I, you know, like in bed at night. If I'll, you know, I want to read a book and I am in bed at night, and my tablet is really heavy, and that's what I read on. So
that's,
here I am trying to, you know, hold it up in the air, and I'm like, I'm going to drop this on my face now, you know?
It's like a big hardcover book in terms of the weight, almost.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And
honestly,
I mean,
I have a Kindle. I use it occasionally. I use it for work. But I'm with you. I just like the feel and the smell and the, you know, of a paper. Mm-hmm. I just like it, because that's what I grew up reading. Can't beat a page. You can dog ear the page, and it's just, there's just something about it, you know. And I think
it becomes your copy a little bit more.
Yeah.
Where Kindle.
Well, that's Kindle. You don't never feel like you own it. It's just there, isn't it? And,
right. Yeah, it's true. And I'm of the mindset, like, my publisher for this was great and allowed me to set the price. So we set the Kindle price at $199, and it's going to stay there for good. And I'm of the mindset that, like, no Kindle's book should be more than, like, $3. I mean, like, one of my publishers has another one listed for $12. Nobody's paying that. I mean...
Yeah.
Not for a Kindle, no, not at all.
Yeah.
We set ours at $3.99, $4.99. It costs less to produce because of nothing physical, but it's still the same amount of work the writer has put into it, whether it's in a Kindle or a paperback.
Yeah.
And that's what you're paying for, not the paper. I mean, But like I said, I like them on the bookshelf. I like to see that. Even I've read them, you know. And I'm not one for reading books. There's only literally a handful of books throughout my entire life I've read more than once. But I just like them. I just like having them there, having just books. And, you know, I'm going to have to buy some more bookshelves soon. But, yeah.
That's my endless dilemma is in a Manhattan apartment, where to put all the books.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Growing up, my mom loved to read, and she always had a bunch of bookshelves, and she was just genius in the way she would, you could get like 3 times the amount of books on her bookshelves than any other one. I mean, you couldn't tell what you had in
awesome.
Them when she had them nice and packed, but they were in there. So
they were there.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Tips. Yeah. I definitely need some tips. I feel like also I've just been reading so much in this last year, like in the absence of doing other things that you normally do. So I've accumulated way more in these last few months than I think I ever had, where it's just like, I'm bored and I'll go on Bookshop and I'll order a book or, you know.
So what's the last book that you finished that you really enjoyed?
I'm reading an arc right now that I'm really enjoying. It's this author, Christine, I don't know how to pronounce her last name, Mangin. And she wrote this great book about 2 years ago that came out that did quite well called Tangerine. It was like a cool kind of Hitchcockian thriller. So I have her advanced copy of her new one, The Palace of the Drowned. And I'm about a third into it, and it's really, really good. I'm enjoying it. I'm working on a thriller project right now, so I'm kind of only reading thrillers, even though I'm promoting a sci-fi. I'm in a thriller mindset right now.
You know, I think it was probably last year as well when things were, you know, getting kind of crazy out there. I went on a kick where I read a lot of maybe they're like mainstream thriller, I suppose you'd call them. And I just, you know, for me, I after reading a couple, I kind of felt like they were just so formulated. Like I knew, it felt like I knew what was going to happen. There was no real surprises. And even when they gave you the big twist, it was still like, I was
coming,
I saw that coming. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So I was kind of disappointed.
That either means you're like just a great reader and you've read enough where you can kind of telegraph it. Or, you know, they just didn't like, I feel like it's, for a thriller writer, it's really all about the execution. And I don't know, I like to think of mine as like literary thrillers, so they're not just kind of by the numbers. But they have twists and turns, and it's really important that the reader can't see the twists and turns, but once it happens, they're like, oh, I totally should have seen it coming, but I didn't.
I like that.
So it's that tricky kind of balance. And it's true. I tend not to read kind of formulaic thrillers. I like the one I just mentioned. It's very, very literary. I mean, somebody else could just call it literary. It just happens to have thriller elements. And I feel like that's where I kind of drift towards in terms of that style.
Well, you know, I wanted to know if you will. We have a segment that we call 11 Questions, and would you be willing to participate in 11 questions with me?
Yeah,
hey.
Do it.
Okay, well, I'll press the button then, shall I?
And now, 11 questions.
Okay, number one, what's your guilty pleasure?
Jesus.
I like that.
I could kill a box. I could just destroy
Cheez-Its.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I love Cheez-Its.
I like that. Yeah, they're good.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you said Jesus. Sorry.
Jesus is my guilty pleasure. I'm Jewish, but Jesus is my guilty pleasure.
Yeah. There you go.
Oh,
and like
goodness.
Great 80s action films. I could just like live in that forever. Like, give me Terminator all day. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I'm with you.
It's
there.
A great movie. Yeah.
And
yeah.
Terminator 2 even better. Like, yeah.
Definitely, definitely. Number two, which do you prefer, the mountains or the ocean?
Ooh, that's It's tough. Depends on my mood. I'm a real beach person, so I love the beach, but there's something really relaxing also about the mountains. So, like, I don't know. Could go either way.
I love the mountains. And, you know, as for the beach, it's got, it comes with all that sand, and you bring it home with you, and it's just no fun. It's just messy.
Yeah.
It's messy.
Yeah, the beach does come with sand. That's true.
What's your favorite lunch meat?
Turkey.
Oh, where's the buzzer?
I'm very boring with my lunch meat, but I do
I was going to say, that is
yeah,
the
yeah.
most boring lunch meat. It really
just,
is. But
I just love turkey. I don't know. I can eat it. Like, yeah, give me turkey and cheese. On a fancier level, give me, like, nice prosciutto from, like, Italy or something like that, or, like, a Serrano ham. So how about that? Yeah.
That's good. Okay, if it were legal to do so, would you eat human flesh?
I'm going to say no on that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm with you. Yeah. I mean, I'm like not even a huge meat eater, you know, fan to begin with. So, you know, just the human thing, just, you know, yuck.
Just,
I'm a little gross.
Just me then.
In general, so like the thought of eating them, nah.
Have you ever been pulled over for a traffic violation?
So I've never gotten a driver's license, so that would be impossible. But I have been on a train pulled over for drinking a beer, so that happened once.
Really? Interesting.
Yeah, huh. And my response, and I don't know, I was just like, wait, I can't drink a beer on the train? And
right,
the cop was
right.
Like, no. And I was like, but it's beer. And he was like, no, you can't do that. And I was like 25, like I wasn't like 15 or anything.
Yeah.
It was a really just like stupid moment. But nothing happened.
Yeah.
So all good.
Well, that's definitely something I'll have to keep in mind. No beer drinking on trains. I mean, who knew?
If you're in Germany, yes. New York City, no.
Android or Apple?
Oh, Apple, yeah.
Yeah, most people
Although,
say Apple.
This
I'm
is my
Android
first
now.
iPhone. Yeah. I had Android up until this phone, but it's better, yeah.
Which franchise do you prefer, Halloween, Friday the 13th, Elm Street, Hellraiser, or Saw?
I'm going to go with The Nightmare on Elm Street. I really loved those movies when I was a kid, and he really kind of scared the shit out of me. So, like, I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Saw is too much. It's like torture movies that I don't like. I like horror with...
Yeah, like, my favorite, I think, movie of all time, pretty much, Zombieland. I think Zombieland's great. It's,
great.
You know...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I love the comedy. So
fun
roller coaster. Yeah. I even like the second one. I did not have high hopes for the second one, the Double Tap. I was, you know, went into it thinking, you know. And I liked it. I loved it. So, you know, yay. They did a good job.
I agree.
Let's see. We're on number 8 here. Roller coasters, yay or nay?
Yay, but not as yay as it used to be for me. I feel like the window is closing for, like the excitement of roller coasters. Although I would rather like go skydiving, like do something like that.
Oh my gosh, that sounds so scary. No, and I think it's an age. I used to love roller coasters, but I'm a little
concerned. It's just the nausea factor of roller coasters, which I feel like I had the last time I was on one. And I know I'm 40 now, like, and it's just not the excitement that it used to be.
For me, it's I don't want to die, you know, and I'm terrified of going to die. See, when I was younger, I was like, oh my God, we're almost gonna die, and it was exciting. And now I'm like, oh God, I don't want to, you know. So it's definitely not as fun.
We don't need
the
this.
Worst
yeah.
death. Like, it would just be not fun at all.
give me one interesting non-writing related fact about you.
One interesting non. I could mimic voices really, really well, so I could kind of do accents, and if I like hear it, I can mimic it quite easily.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I like that.
Just random.
You know, in my head, when I hear the accent in my head, I'm mimicking it perfect, and then I go to speak it out loud, and I'm like, yeah, it reminds me of like Joey on Friends trying to learn French with Phoebe. That was me.
Well, you're trying at least.
You know, yeah, there we go. I'm trying. What is your least favorite part of the writing process?
I'm going to tell you exactly what my least favorite part is. It's when you finish and you have to like ask people for blurbs for your book, which I'm dealing with right now. I have a young adult book coming out. So it's like another new kind of genre that I'm going towards. And I don't really know that many young adult authors. And I absolutely hate, and I had to ask people today, and I just like cringe when I do it. It's the worst.
I think that's the first time I've heard that one. Most people say editing. Yeah.
Yeah,
that's the big.
No,
the big
I love
one
that. Yeah, I love that.
Really?
All day. And writing comes very easy, and it's asking strangers for blurbs. It's absolute hell.
And our bonus question: baseball or stamp collection?
Definitely baseball.
Boo!
You said, "Yay!"
Boo!
I am seriously excited because at the end of the month we start spring training, and I'm excited.
I am a huge Yankees fan. I'm born and bred in New York City, and I love Yankees.
Nice.
So, and the thought of potentially being able to go to a game again this year, and not obviously at the start of the season, but maybe by the end of the season. Makes me very excited because I missed them a lot last year. It made me cry inside.
Me too. It definitely, there was, you know, in watching the games and seeing nobody in the stands, and
I know.
They had the cutouts or whatever, the cardboard people, and it was sad. It was.
Me,
so,
like,
it must be awful for the players because it just. It can't be the same for them, you know, not because they must love the crowds.
Especially when you're playing in your home stadium and
the
roar of the crowd. And, like, I mean, I don't know. To me, it's so synonymous with, like, summertime and just going to games with friends. And, it was something I missed a lot this year. And I feel like they suffered because of it, although they've not been great for the last couple of years. So I don't know if that's a full excuse.
Yeah, well, I'm a Blue Jays fan, so, you know,
Little rivalry. Little rivalry,
Yeah, that's true, yeah. And, you know, they do awful all the time, but I'm still a diehard fan, so, yeah.
That's when you know you're a diehard fan, when it's a team that doesn't win all, you know, like, a football fan who loves the Patriots. It's like, good for you.
It's true. Well, we are just about out of time for our show, Lee, and I want to thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Time.
Yeah, this was a blast. I had a blast doing it.
Yeah, you definitely have to come back the next time you publish a book. We want you back and more reading. And
I would love to.
Yeah, thank you so much. We had a great time.
Thanks again. Have a great night.
Yeah, and you. Thanks a lot. I'll speak to you again very soon.
Cool.
Night.
Okay, bye-bye.
Night.
Time has beaten us again. You know, it's... Yeah, where does it go?
I don't know.
but the way time's going, it'll seem like we're back again, like, you know, in 2 days. But
tomorrow.
Tomorrow. In fact, why go off the air? We might as well just stay on and do the next show now.
That's our Bizarro story we're going to write.
It is.
You know?
There you go. Indeed.
Yeah.
Indeed. The last podcast. But no, I'm going to go to bed. So it is time to say goodnight, Xtina.
Goodnight, Xtina.
Goodnight.
and they left you so long on this avenue. And here I stand in the strangest land, not knowing what to say or do. As I gaze around at these strangers in town, I guess the only stranger is me. And
I wonder,
yes, I wonder,
oh, I wonder,
is this the way life's meant to be? Although it's only a day since I was taken away, I'm left standing here looking in wonder.
Get your life.
Oh, the ground at my feet, maybe it's just the old street, but everything that I know lies under.
Get your life.
And when I see what they've done to this place that was home, we'll be right back.